When it comes to hard work, there's one important rule. Pick the right tool for the right job. That's why Chevy offers a family of Silverado pickup trucks designed just for the job. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
/7:19, music from Ukraine. A little something sent to us by Joseph Lindsley this morning. Let's check in with Joe. Hi, Joe. What's going on today?
Hey, Bob. Hello from a sunny day in Kharkiv, 30 miles from Russia, about 65 degrees. And this music that we're listening to is the closest approximation of what I could find of the music I heard in the park, the city garden in central Kharkiv today and the past several days. There were two old men, one playing the accordion, and the other playing the clarinet, and playing this very calm French music as people walk around in the sunshine. You know, compared to, say, New York or Chicago, people walk, when they're in the park, they walk, at least as far as I remember. But here, Ukrainians walk slowly. You see people enjoying life, all different ages, soldiers and civilians, taking a stroll, sometimes just stopping to take in the sunshine on these beautiful days. And as yesterday when I was going through the same park, which, by the way, has the lawns are perfectly green. And there's a crew of older people that pick up the leaves and make sure there's no trash. You know, in Singapore, they have to cane people to keep the cities clean. But Kharkiv prides itself on being completely clean, and people take care of this city. Even as you see, and you know, it's been very windy the past day, so a lot of glass is blown around and different pieces of wreckage. But very quickly, people clean it up. And yesterday, as I was going through this the city garden named after the great Ukrainian poet Shevchenko, I was hearing music very similar to this. This very calm French music, watching people take a stroll, coming to and from the city zoo. And then I saw this very famous Japanese guy, Fuminori Tsuchiko. He's 75 years old. He's from Tokyo. And he has been in Ukraine pretty much since the very beginning of Russia's full-scale invasion. He lived with the people of Kharkiv for 6 months in the metro here during the most intense days when there was nonstop, not only missile attacks, but Russian artillery, because the Russians were at the very edge of the city. And he was here and he started to make food for anyone who needed it. And now he's got a restaurant that serves free food. It's his cafe in the neighborhood called Saltivka, which has been so heavily bombarded by the Russians. And he said when he was 15 years old back in Tokyo, he said this to Ukrainian media Ukrainska Pravda, he watched a film about life in a Nazi concentration camp, and he saw what the Nazis did to the Jews. He said, "I always wondered why people could kill so many." And that memory from when he was 15 inspired the 75-year-old Japanese guy who had been retired. His wife had died. He said, "I'm coming to Ukraine to help." And as I walked through the park, listening to the accordion player and the clarinet player, and I saw Mr. Fumiori, he had a bench with a Ukrainian flag and a Japanese flag, and he was accepting donations for his kitchen. And as the citizens of Kharkiv, men and women, old and young, were walking by, they were all lining up to take a picture with him, to give him money, to hug him. And you really saw this great, you know, despite different cultures, people united in wanting to be free and standing for decency and freedom in that scene in that beautiful park. And the other thing it showed me, you know, I've been in Kharkiv, in some very bleak times when there were missile attacks every other day. I can feel the shudder from those missiles that have hit quite close to me. And to see now, to walk through these parks, I've never seen the streets so crowded. I see life coming back. Even though the attack could happen at any moment and there are many air raid alarms, but I see life coming back here. And as we look at, we have the news today that once again, yesterday in the Russian occupied Crimean Peninsula, Ukrainians have been able to destroy some Russian air defense. And increasingly we are seeing Ukrainian activity in Sevastopol, which is the biggest city that the Russians occupy in Crimea. They used to have their naval fleet there, but the naval fleet has now been dispersed. And we still do not see any major response from Russia. Through the night, last night, Russia did attack several cities in southern and sort of southwestern or south central Ukraine. And so they are attacking places near the front, or you know, near closer to Crimea, but there has been no major Russian attack. And so we, as you look at this scenes of calm here in Kharkiv, it seems that Ukraine is in a moment of great strength, just as the country is being, I think, quite ignored by the global media.
Mm-hmm. Yes, with what's going on in Israel, that's certainly the case. But here's more encouraging news. There's a report that a recent Russian military reshuffle in occupied parts of Kherson likely reflects pressures in defending occupied areas. What do you make of that, Joe?
Well, and exactly, and we've had the big news also in the past couple of weeks. Ukrainians have established bridgeheads across the Dnipro River in occupied Kherson. They push the Russians back, and that's a major, they cross a major obstacle. They're now across the river, and they're holding on to that territory. The Russians have been unable to take it, and Ukrainians are advancing. And so this is quite extraordinary. And then at the same time, we have this article in Time magazine, the cover story, the interview with President Zelensky. And strangely, that story quoted anonymous people, you know, saying that things are very dire, and you know, advisors to Zelensky, allegedly. And so this is a very strange story. And the response of everyone I speak to here in Ukraine is, first, you have to remember it's Ukrainian people, not some anonymous advisor, that want to be free and that don't want to quit and don't want to give up. But also, if you look at it, the guy that wrote that story in Time magazine, I'm sure he's a very good reporter, but he, in 2014, when the Ukrainians had the Revolution of Dignity, he had two stories. One of them, the headline was, and this is in 2014, many Ukrainians want Russians to invade. And the other, headline also from about the same time, I think in spring of 2014, no, Russia will not invade Ukraine. So this is the reporter that wrote the cover story that has these dark anonymous quotes saying that the situation is very dire here. And I mean, obviously it is. I mean, it's difficult, you know, and as I walk through that park, you know that everyone has a story of, you know, someone at the front or someone who's been killed. There's a memorial there in the park, a new memorial to children who've been killed just in the Kharkiv region. And so it's, you know, it's obviously still difficult. But when you look at the scale of what's happening, what Ukraine is able to do to the Russians in Crimea, and the lack of a Russian major response, again, since Ukraine made that major strike on September 22nd, on the Black Sea Fleet, this is pretty extraordinary. And this is why it's a bit strange when you hear, for example, the new Speaker of the House, Mr. Johnson from Louisiana, said in the past couple of days, maybe it was yesterday, that he's, you know, we need to focus on helping Israel, and we'll deal with Ukraine later. He said Israel is a pressing and urgent need, even though there are lots of things going on around the world. And here's where we have to ask this question, because obviously, you know, Russia, Hamas, and Iran are on a regular basis now meeting with each other. I mean, they're not hiding the fact that they are working together. And so it's strange that that it seems that, at least in some high-level sectors of American politics, they want to ignore the fact that Russia and Iran and Hamas are collaborating and say that Israel is a separate thing from what's happening here in Ukraine. And at the very moment when, like, again, in that scene in the park, listening to that music in Kharkiv, when I've never seen this city so vibrant and peaceful and strong and safe, at the very moment, this is the same case throughout much of Ukraine, again, except for areas near the front, like Kherson. At the very moment Ukraine is in a new type of strength, using these weapons from the West, all of a sudden, there's a desire to sort of let the thing disappear. And this is very concerning.
Yeah, it's almost like Ukraine is, in a way, being punished for its success. You know what I mean?
Well, and this is, this is, I think, always what happens. As soon as you move away from being the underdog, which Ukraine still is, I mean, Russia is a massive country with tons of bodies to throw at this. But it's just, you know, and it's like what we see with with Israel responding to Hamas, you know, as soon as Israel responds, we hear calls for ceasefire. You know, no one was calling for ceasefire when Hamas was attacking Israel. And it's exactly when you move into the moment of success, when people, I think part of this is just a lack of imagination in the West. You know, I mean, people I know well and talk to, whether they're in Austin or Washington, D.C., they can't imagine a world without a powerful Russia. They can't imagine that we can really change this global order of terror and fear. But that Ukrainians know that you can do it. They did that in 2014 against all odds in that revolution of dignity. They kicked out the pro-Russian regime. And, you know, when I was in one of the interviews I did recently with Ukrainska Pravda, with my friend Taras Bik, who was part of that revolution of 2014, he described to me, he said, that was really Ukraine's first republic, was in the streets of Kyiv in 2014. The citizens figured out how to control themselves. There was no police. They self-policed. There was no crime as a result. They kept everything in order to get their freedom. And it seems like it's impossible to so many around the world. But Ukrainians have showed it in 2014, and they're showing it today.
Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine on this wintry day in the Midwest. Joe, I'm glad you can enjoy a little bit of peace and quiet and some nice time in the park there. And we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, Bob, my friends in Israel, I would say from them, on behalf of them, Baruch Hashem, which means thanks be to God, thanks that it's not worse than it could be. So Baruch Hashem.
Baruch Hashem. Joseph Lindsley in Ukraine. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Bob.